Welcome back, everyone, to The Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be diving into a topic that's been generating a lot of buzz lately, and that is how social media is impacting the world of arbitration. You know, you might be thinking, okay, what does my Instagram feed have to do with legal proceedings? Well, you might be surprised. It all boils down to this concept of impartiality, which, as you know, is like the bedrock of any fair arbitration process.
Right. So in arbitration, you know, unlike in a traditional courtroom, the parties actually get to choose their arbitrator, right?
Yeah.
And they're not just looking for expertise, but they're also seeking out someone they believe will be completely unbiased in, you know, making a decision.
So it's almost like picking your own referee for a game. You want someone who'll make the calls fairly.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And traditionally, you know, arbitrators would disclose any potential conflicts of interest based on, you know, professional or personal connections, things you typically find on a CV, for example. Mm-hmm. But social media kind of throws a wrench in things, you know.
Yeah.
It creates this whole other web of connections that's not always so obvious.
That's a good point. So can you give me an example of how a seemingly harmless social media connection could actually raise questions about an arbitrator's impartiality?
Sure. Let's say, for instance, an arbitrator regularly likes and comments on the posts of a CEO who happens to be a party in a case that they're overseeing. Even if they don't know the CEO personally, it could still create a perception of bias, right?
Yeah.
The opposing party might wonder, you know, is this arbitrator truly neutral?
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's like, you know, if a referee accidentally revealed their favorite team before a game. So how are we dealing with this new challenge?
Well, there's definitely a growing push for more concrete guidelines regarding social media disclosure and arbitration. Right now, a lot of arbitrators rely on their own personal judgment, but that could be, well, subjective, right? These proposed guidelines aim to create a more standardized process.
Okay, so if I were an arbitrator, what are like the top three things I need to remember about these guidelines?
Well, firstly, if you've actively connected with someone involved in a case, you know, on a platform like Facebook, LinkedIn, or X, that connection should be disclosed. That's number one. Secondly, you know, pay attention to the nature of your interactions. Liking someone's vacation photo is one thing, but consistently engaging with their posts about legal matters, especially those relevant to a case, is another. And finally, even if you didn't initiate the connection, if your overall social media activity suggests a strong opinion on something related to the case, it's probably best to err on the side of transparency and disclose that as well.
So really practical tips there. I can see how these deep dives are super helpful for extracting the most crucial information. Now, I imagine these guidelines are stirring up some debate in the legal world, right?
Oh, absolutely. Many arbitrators view them as a necessary step towards greater transparency and maintaining trust in the process. However, you know, some do feel that they're a bit intrusive and could lead to unnecessary burdens. Attorneys, on the other hand, tend to welcome the increased transparency. They see it as crucial for ensuring they can choose the most impartial arbitrator for their client.
So it's kind of a tug of war between an arbitrator's autonomy and the need to make sure everyone involved feels confident in the fairness of the proceedings.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance for sure. And while these guidelines are still being debated, they've definitely started a much needed conversation about, you know, the changing role of social media in professional spaces.
You mentioned that the guidelines even offer sample language for arbitrators to use in their disclosures, right? Can you give me an example?
Yeah, sure. Imagine an arbitrator includes a statement like, I have active accounts on LinkedIn and X, and I've searched these platforms for connections to the parties involved in this case, their legal representatives, and any known key witnesses. I am connected on LinkedIn with the defendant's expert witness. We went to the same university and connected a few years ago. Something like that.
Okay, so very upfront and clear. It shows that the arbitrator's done their due diligence, considered potential conflicts, and is being transparent.
Precisely. And the guidelines also stress that, you know, if any connections are found, the arbitrator should give details about the nature of that connection and how it came about.
This is really eye-opening. I mean, it makes you realize that social media has added a whole new layer of complexity to ensuring fairness in these proceedings. What do you think, how might these guidelines affect the arbitrator selection process going forward?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I think we'll probably see attorneys scrutinizing social media profiles even more closely during the selection process. You know, they'll be looking for anything that might raise doubts about impartiality, even seemingly insignificant connections or online behavior.
So basically, if you're aspiring to be an arbitrator, building a professional and impartial online persona is becoming even more crucial, right?
Exactly. Just like you curate your CV and your professional portfolio, being mindful of your digital footprint is essential. That includes everything from the groups you join to the content you share and even the people you connect with online.
So your online presence is essentially an extension of your professional reputation. And for arbitrators, that reputation needs to be spotless.
It really does. And it highlights how social media is changing the game for professionals in all sorts of fields, not just law.
That's a great point. It's not just about arbitrators. This raises bigger questions about how we navigate the increasingly fuzzy boundaries between our personal and professional lives online.
It definitely does. Social media isn't just for sharing cat videos and vacation photos anymore. It's become a part of our professional identity and can have real-world consequences.
Right. But before we go too deep down that rabbit hole, I want to make sure we touch on the potential benefits of social media for arbitrators. It's not all doom and gloom.
Right. Oh, not at all. Social media can actually be a fantastic tool for professional development.
Can you expand on that? What are some ways arbitrators can use social media to their advantage?
Well, for starters, they can stay updated on, you know, the latest legal developments and industry trends by following reputable news sources, legal journals, and thought leaders in the field.
So it's like a customized news feed, constantly updating them on their specific area of expertise.
Exactly. It's an amazing way to stay in the loop and participate in discussions about emerging issues and best practices.
What about networking? I'm guessing social media is helpful for connecting with other professionals in the field as well, right?
Absolutely. Platforms like LinkedIn are designed for professional networking. Arbitrators can use them to connect with colleagues, attend virtual conferences, and participate in online forums.
So it's not just about avoiding conflicts of interest. Social media can also help build those professional connections and expand your knowledge base.
It's all about finding the right balance, you know, leveraging the benefits of social media while still being aware of the potential pitfalls.
Now, before we jump to part two of our deep dive, I want to touch on something you mentioned earlier, the idea that attorneys will probably be scrutinizing social media profiles even more carefully during the selection process. Do you think this could create a situation where arbitrators feel pressured to, like, censor themselves online or avoid expressing their personal opinions altogether?
You know, that's a valid concern. We don't want to create a climate where arbitrators feel like they have to constantly walk on eggshells online.
Yeah, it's about striking that balance, you know, promoting transparency and accountability without stifling open discourse and genuine expression.
Exactly. We don't want to discourage arbitrators from engaging in thoughtful discussions online or expressing their views on important matters. The key is to do so responsibly and be aware of how those expressions might be perceived by others.
A lot of this seems to come down to context, right? A single comment or retweet, if taken out of context, might not actually reflect someone's broader perspective.
You're absolutely right. It's crucial to avoid jumping to conclusions based solely on someone's social media activity.
So while it's important for arbitrators to be conscious of their online presence, it's equally important for those who are reviewing their profiles to do so with a sense of fairness and understanding.
Absolutely. It's not about digging for dirt or trying to catch someone out. It's about getting a complete picture of the individual and determining if there's anything that might raise legitimate concerns about their impartiality.
That's such an important point. This isn't about, like, a social media witch hunt. It's about promoting transparency and responsible online behavior while upholding the principles of fairness and due process.
Well put. It's definitely a delicate balance, but one that we need to strive for.
Okay, so to our listeners, as you can see, this is a pretty nuanced issue. We've just started scratching the surface in this first part of our deep dive. But before we jump to part two, where we'll explore some real-world case studies and discuss the possibility of a universal code of conduct for online professional behavior, I want to leave you with this thought.
Okay, I'm listening.
You know, this whole discussion about arbitrators and social media makes me wonder, could this be like a glimpse into a larger societal shift? As social media keeps blurring the lines between our personal and professional lives, are we all going to have to become more aware of our online personas and how they might be seen by others, even in seemingly unrelated situations?
That's a fascinating question, and I think it's one that we'll be wrestling with for a long time to come.
Come back next time as we delve deeper into this captivating and ever-evolving topic.
Yeah, it really does make you think, doesn't it? About this whole idea of our online selves and how that plays into our professional lives. It's definitely a trend to watch.
It is. It really is. Okay, so let's Let's dig into some real-world examples now. I know there have been some cases where undisclosed social media connections have actually led to arbitration awards being completely overturned. Can you tell me more about those?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There was this case a while back where an arbitrator didn't disclose that they were Facebook friends with the CEO of one of the companies involved in the case. And this connection was discovered after the award had already been given. And the losing party successfully argued that that this friendship created an appearance of bias, and the award was thrown out.
Wow. So a seemingly harmless Facebook friendship actually had serious legal ramifications.
Yeah, it did. And that case really highlighted, I think, the need for these clearer guidelines around social media disclosure. You know, mm-hmm. it showed that these virtual connections can be just as impactful as as traditional professional or personal relationships.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of why these deep dives are so important. It's not just about like abstract legal concepts, you know. It's about things that are happening in real cases, and it could have a direct impact on how disputes are resolved.
Yeah, absolutely. It's real world stuff. And there have been other cases too where social media posts themselves have become a source of contention. Like there was one arbitration where the arbitrator's tweets expressing, strong opinions on a political matter were brought into the light. And the party whose views differed from the arbitrator argued that, that showed bias.
So it's not just about the connections, right? It's also about the content you share and the opinions that you express online. Even if those opinions aren't like directly related to the case, it could still raise questions.
Yeah, exactly. It goes back to that idea of an appearance of bias. Even if an arbitrator genuinely believes that they can remain completely objective, if their activity online creates even a perception of partiality, it can damage the integrity of the whole process.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned earlier these calls for a universal code of conduct for online behavior, professional behavior. Do you think that's a realistic goal?
I think it's ambitious. It's definitely ambitious, but I do think it's something worth aiming for. A universal code could give us a shared framework for thinking about ethical conduct online, and that applies to a lot of different professions, right? It could help to clarify expectations and reduce the risk of misunderstandings and things like that.
Okay, so what would a code like that look like? What kinds of guidelines would it include?
Well, I mean, it would probably have to cover a pretty wide range of issues, from social media interactions to things like online privacy and data security. It might include, guidelines for avoiding online harassment or bullying, using professional email addresses, not sharing confidential information, stuff like that.
So it's not just about what you post, right? It's also about how you conduct yourself online in general when you're acting in a professional capacity.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's about recognizing that your actions online have real world consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And that you have a responsibility to maintain those ethical standards even when you're in those virtual spaces.
Okay. So creating a truly universal code like that, it seems like that would be a pretty big undertaking, right? I mean, there are so many different professions with different ethical guidelines and different different norms.
Oh yeah, it definitely wouldn't be easy, but I think it's a challenge that's worth taking on. We live in such an interconnected world now that developing a shared understanding of what ethical online behavior looks like is just essential.
Yeah, I agree. It's not just about, protecting individual reputations or the integrity of specific professions. It's really about creating a more ethical digital culture as a whole.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Okay. So while a universal code of conduct might be like a long-term goal, are there things that individual professions can do, right now to start addressing these issues?
Yeah, I mean, they can definitely start by developing their own internal guidelines or codes of conduct that are tailored to their specific field.
Yeah.
These guidelines could address social media use, online communication, and other aspects of, you know, online professional conduct that are relevant to their work.
So kind of like those social media disclosure guidelines we were talking about earlier for arbitrator.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great example of a professional body taking a proactive approach, you know, to addressing these challenges.
Okay. So what are some other examples of proactive steps that organizations can take?
Well, I think another really important step is providing education and training to members. Mm-hmm. You know, organizations can offer workshops or webinars or even just, you know, online resources that help people understand the ethical considerations and how to avoid potential issues.
So it's not just about, setting rules. It's also about, about giving people the tools and the resources to understand those rules and how to actually apply them in practice.
Yeah, exactly. Education and awareness are really, really key here.
Now, you mentioned earlier that social media can actually be a valuable tool for professional development, right? So could professional organizations play a role in helping their members actually use social media effectively and ethically?
Oh, for sure. They could create, you know, online forums or groups where members can connect and share resources and you know, engage in discussions about relevant topics in their field.
Okay, so rather than shying away from social media altogether, they can actually embrace it as a way to build community and encourage that professional growth.
Yeah, exactly. It's about shifting the focus from risk avoidance to responsible engagement.
That's a great point. It's about recognizing that social media, when used thoughtfully, can actually strengthen your professional practice and create valuable connections.
Yeah, it's about harnessing that power for good.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to take a minute to address a potential concern that some of our listeners might have. We've talked a lot about the importance of transparency and accountability online, but is there a risk that this focus on social media could lead to a culture of, you know, over scrutiny and judgment where people are afraid to express themselves authentically and express themselves online?
Yeah, it's a valid concern. We definitely don't want to create an environment where people, feel like they can't be themselves online or share their genuine thoughts and opinions.
Right. It's a delicate balance. You know, we want to encourage responsible behavior and hold people accountable, but we also don't want to, we don't want to stifle free expression or create a culture of fear, you know, where everyone's walking on eggshells.
You're right. It's not about policing, you know, people's every thought and utterance. It's about promoting that thoughtful engagement and recognizing that our words and our actions online can really have an impact. You know, they can have real world impact.
So it's not about censorship. It's about awareness and it's about responsibility.
Exactly. It's about finding that middle ground where we can, foster open and respectful dialogue. While also, you know, upholding those ethical standards.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. Transparency and accountability shouldn't come at the expense of authenticity and open expression.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It's about creating that digital environment where people feel safe to share their perspectives and engage in healthy debate and learn from each other.
Okay, I think we've covered a lot of ground here in this second part of our deep dive. We've explored some real world examples of how social media has impacted arbitration. We've talked about the potential for this for this universal code of conduct, and we've talked about the importance of balancing transparency with authenticity and open expression. But before we move on to our final thoughts and takeaways, I want to circle back to our listener and ask you this.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, we've talked about all the challenges and the opportunities that social media presents for professionals, but what about for you personally? Have you ever stopped to think about how your own social media activity might be perceived by others, especially in a professional context?
That's a really good question. And to be honest, it's one that I've been thinking about more and more myself, lately.
Yeah, me too. This whole conversation has really, you know, really made me more aware of my own digital footprint and how it might be, you know, how it might be interpreted by others.
Yeah, it's definitely a good reminder that, you know, we're all kind of living in a glass house these days, right? Yeah. What we do online is often very public, and it can be, you know, it can be easily accessed by anyone. That includes, you know, potential employers or clients, or in the case of arbitrators, you know, the parties involved in a dispute.
It's like that old saying, right? Dance like nobody's watching, but email like it may one day be read aloud in a deposition.
Oh, that's great. That's a good one.
Yeah. So I think it's important for all of us to, you know, to take a step back and think about how we're presenting ourselves online. You know, are we being mindful of the image that we're projecting? Are we, you know, are we engaging in conversations respectfully? Are we being authentic while also being mindful of, you know, of those professional boundaries?
Those are all great questions. Yeah. And the answers might, you know, they might be different depending on your profession and your own personal comfort levels.
Right. But I think the main takeaway is pretty clear, right? We all, you know, we all need to be more thoughtful, more intentional about our online presence.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
So with that in mind, let's move on to our final part of this deep dive. We'll pull together some of the key takeaways from our discussion and we'll leave you with a few final thoughts to ponder. Okay, so as we wrap up our deep dive into this whole social media and arbitration thing, let's try to pull out some of the key takeaways for everyone listening.
Yeah, for sure. I think the first thing is just recognizing that social media isn't, you know, just a personal space anymore, right?
Yeah.
It's become so intertwined with our professional lives and for people in fields like arbitration, where that impartiality is so crucial. It really does. You know, presents some new and unique challenges.
Yeah, it's like social media is holding up this mirror to all of our biases and connections, and it's revealing things that, you know, that maybe traditional disclosure methods just wouldn't pick up on.
Right, and that's especially important in arbitration because, you know, like we talked about earlier, the parties involved actually get to choose their arbitrator.
Right, they're picking their judge essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. They want someone that they believe is going to be you know, neutral and unbiased. So these guidelines for social media disclosure, they're really you know, they're an attempt to bring a lot more transparency into that whole selection process.
And we saw how those guidelines, you know, they cover all sorts of different scenarios, right? Across different platforms, everything from, you know, Facebook friendships to LinkedIn connections to even those, you know, those quick little interactions on X.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
We also talked about, you know, how these guidelines are kind of sparking this bigger conversation about the need for some kind of universal code of conduct for online behavior in professional settings, which I think is really interesting.
It is.
And that's something that, you know, that could provide a framework for navigating those, you know, those increasingly blurred lines between our personal and professional lives online.
For sure.
And this isn't just about arbitrators, right? It's, this applies to all of us. You know, think about your own social media, you know, your own social media activity. Have you ever posted something that you later regretted or realized could be taken the wrong way? I mean, I think we've all been there.
Yeah, I think we all have probably.
It's a good reminder that, you know, in the digital age, those actions, our online actions can have, you know, they can have real world consequences, especially in professional context. So what can people do? I mean, I think a good starting point is just to, you know, be more mindful of your online persona. Take a look at your profiles from a professional perspective. You know, what image are you putting out there? Are your, you know, are your connections and your interactions, are they aligned with the ethical standards of, you know, of your profession?
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's important to stay informed about the evolving guidelines and the expectations regarding, you know, online behavior in your field.
Right.
A lot of professional organizations are actually, you know, they're developing resources and training to help their members, you know, navigate all this stuff.
That's good.
So there's help out there.
And remember that, you know, while transparency is definitely important, it shouldn't come at the expense of, you know, authenticity and open expression. It's about finding that that balance between being true to yourself and being, you know, and being mindful of how your you know, how your words and your actions might be perceived.
Yeah, it's a tough balance, but it's definitely worth striving for.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, as we navigate this this increasingly digital world, it's you know, it's really up to each of us to kind of promote that culture of responsible and ethical behavior online.
Well said. So we've covered a lot in this deep dive, but I want to leave you with one final thought. This whole, you know, this whole convergence of social media and professional conduct, it raises a question that I think goes, you know, goes way beyond any single profession.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
You know, it makes you wonder, could this be like a catalyst for a much broader societal shift in how we approach online ethics and accountability in general? You know, as technology keeps evolving, will we see a push towards a more standardized and universal understanding of, you know, what's considered appropriate behavior online?
That's that's a great question, and it's one that I think we'll be grappling with for quite a while.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, as you continue to scroll through your feeds and you know, engage in those online conversations, just remember that you're not just building a personal profile, right?
Yeah.
You're shaping a digital legacy that you know, that reflects who you are, both professionally and personally.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
So we hope this deep dive has given you some valuable insights and you know, maybe sparked some critical thinking about the role of social media in our lives. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And until next time, keep diving deep into the topics that matter to you, and we'll be here to help you, you know, help you navigate the complexities of this ever-changing world.